All right, everybody, it is 8:30 in the morning on the last day of Tech Ed. Thanks for showing up.
Yeah, thanks to all the stalwart souls who got up early to make it out, and we hope we're going to put on a good show and make it worth your while. So, in case you're confused, the title of this session is Automated Service Request with Microsoft System Center 2012 R2. My name is Mike Roberts, and this is my dynamic colleague, Mr. Ryan Andorfer, who's MVP in the cloud and data center management area.
Not too much else to say.
Yeah. So, obligatory agenda slide. Today, we're going to try and tell a story. So, Ryan and I are really going to stretch our acting chops and play the role of two IT professionals.
Might be kind of hard to believe.
And well, at least the professional part.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to walk you through a scenario that we faced in our actual day jobs. So we're going to start by framing the problem, the issue that we're trying to resolve. Then we're going to collaboratively whiteboard a solution architecture to solve the problem. Then the vast majority of our session is going to be a demo of actually building out the self-service portal. Very demo heavy. I like to see things built. I like to build things, so that's what we're going to focus on. And at the end of the session, we're going to talk about some lessons we learned in our actual job building and implementing a self-service portal in our enterprise. So we also published a concurrent series of blog posts. Charles Joy was kind enough to let us do some guest blogging on the Building Clouds blog. And I wouldn't worry too much about trying to jot down notes in this session or take screenshots, because everything we're going to do is all documented out there on the Building Clouds blog. We're going to have step-by-step instructions to do the configuration and all the scripts, downloadable resources, so if you're interested in doing so, you can reproduce our solution in your environment.
In fact, 75 minutes is probably too short for us to really go into a huge amount of detail. There's actually a heck of a lot more detail on everything we're going to talk about today in the blog posts on Charles' blog.
Yeah, we might just gloss over a few things, but I'll try and call it out and let you know when you can go to the blog for more details. All right, so let's get started. Ryan and I are dynamic young IT professionals at a growing company. This is a good problem to have, right? Our business is doing well. They're hiring more people. They have a high demand for our services. And historically, our company has been kind of a relationship-based company. We work based on who you know. So if I want to deploy a new service, I can talk to Tom, and he can set up a server for me, and Megan can allocate IP addresses, and then I go talk to the storage guys. And that's worked for us so well, pretty well so far.
Yeah, Mike, the problem is that our managers come up to us and said, it's not actually working as well as we think it is. We're coming up with a lot of different problems with this. You and I know everybody, not everybody else does.
And even with the recent reorgs, I mean, it's hard for us to keep it straight. Our customers are complaining that our processes aren't standardized. Some people take requests through email. Some people demand a support ticket. The time that they spend waiting for us to fill the requests is too long. It's unacceptable. And because our processes aren't automated, occasionally we slip up and things aren't always done the same way.
Yeah, that brings a really good point up. I'm not really sure that this model of us just doing everything manually for people is actually a really good model for us either.
Yeah, I mean, the request volume has increased dramatically with all our growth. The headcount fairy hasn't come to visit us, and really, I'd enjoy my job more if I didn't spend all my time processing these requests and I could do things like investigating new capabilities and services to deliver to our clients.
Or go get more coffee.
Or get more coffee. That's also very important. Okay, so I've been talking to our manager and I pitched the idea of a self-service portal so users can solve their own problems, submit requests, and it'll just happen.
Yeah, so let's figure out what that might actually look like.
All right. So in a past life, I was a SharePoint admin.
Hard to believe.
I know. We have a pretty large SharePoint deployment at our company. So I think a good solution for our front end would be using SharePoint to take those requests in. Our end users are familiar with it. And they're the people we're doing this for. We got to make sure it's something usable for them. So that's my recommendation there. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, sounds like a really good idea. Like you said, there's a whole bunch of people at our company that know how to do SharePoint work.
Awesome. All right, so that takes care of the user interface, but we actually need to write some code to make this automation happen. I'm a huge fan of PowerShell. I know it's gotten a lot of press here at the conference. So what do you say about that?
Hey, man, I love PowerShell. We've been learning it for the last 4 or 5 years. Let's go for it.
And we already got the built-in integration to the key systems we work with, like Exchange, file shares, and Active Directory. So I think that's a good fit.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
So in the past, I've done something similar. I just set up a scheduled task to run on a server using Windows Task Scheduler. What do you think about that idea?
So I'm with you on PowerShell, Mike.
Okay.
I'm not so with you on the scheduled tasks thing.
Okay.
So let's think about that for a second. Do you really think we want to run our enterprise kind of just with scheduled tasks in PowerShell? There's a lot of questions it doesn't really answer for us. Like, what happens if that scheduled task box dies?
Oh, yeah.
And where are you going to store your credentials? The security team's been getting on you.
Yeah, those plain text credentials probably aren't the best idea.
So I really think that it makes sense for us to, and where you can actually see your history on things running. There's a lot of answers that I just don't think scheduled task answer.
Okay.
And I think it's probably worth us actually taking a look at an enterprise tool for this solution. And wouldn't you know it, these great people in the front row have actually released a product that I think fits this pretty well called Service Management Automation. So SMA is a highly available PowerShell engine and I'd run our PowerShell code on. So let's use that.
So it solves those problems like credentials and then you can scale it out, so if we have a high volume of jobs.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty nice, and it's just our PowerShell script running on top of it.
All right, sweet. So we're running PowerShell and Service Management Automation, and we got our SharePoint front end.
Yeah.
I got an idea to connect the two.
Okay.
I know SharePoint has OData APIs to access the list, the data that's stored in SharePoint lists. So, and I know PowerShell now has that great invoke REST method commandlet. So I think that would be a great way to stitch the two together and
sounds like a good idea.
Let SMA know when requests are submitted.
Exactly. So we're just going to have SMA go out and kind of look for stuff inside of SharePoint using that REST method.
Nice. Works for me.
Cool.
So back when I did things in Task Scheduler, I mean, I could just log onto the box and look at what it had run to see which jobs failed and which completed. Is there anything equivalent for SMA?
Yeah, you know, they've been talking a lot about this thing called Windows Azure Pack at the sessions here. And I think there's actually a provider for SMA that sticks into it that'll actually light up and let you see all the stuff going on in that system.
Nice.
You know, it even has a nice little web authoring tool where you can write our PowerShell code.
Oh, write it there in the browser?
Yeah, right there in the browser.
That's pretty cool, but I'm not the best developer, and I really can't be productive unless I can have that F5 debugging in my local PowerShell ISE. Is there any way we could work it out so that I can develop locally before deploying to SMA?
Sure. You know, we're going to hook SMA up to monitor SharePoint. What if we actually just hooked up SMA to monitor our source control system, too?
Oh, nice. I like that. So I can just check code into TFS, and then that'll handle the deployment to SMA?
Yeah, I think we can get that to work.
That sounds great. Okay, I think we got a good idea. We've done some drawing. We've got some boxes and arrows. Let's see what we want this thing to look like.
Yeah, exactly. Can we mock up some UIs?
Yeah, so I did some mock-ups just using PowerPoint. And I kind of envisioned a home page with customizable icons to denote request categories. Then users can click into a category, see what requests are contained within it, and then ultimately get to the self-service request form where they can fill in a few simple input controls, and then they're off to the races.
It looks really good. As long as we keep that database icon, I think we're golden.
Oh, yeah, you like that one?
Yeah, it's really pretty.
I worked long and hard on that. Okay, so I think it's time for demo. Let's build stuff.
Here we go. That's way
more fun than talking.
Fun for some people.
I like to talk. Usually people don't like to listen to me. So I did a little more requirements gathering, generated this document, and I think this has the fields that we're going to need to track for our demo request. And the demo request that I propose we automate is requesting DFS files, because With our new acquisitions, I know the finance department has been asking for a lot of those lately.
Yeah, that's something I spent a whole bunch of time doing, going out to DFS and creating new shares and giving them to the people.
Awesome. All right, so we're going to need to know which department share route it's going to go under. So we're going to need a choice field for the department. Going to need a text input for the share name, and we've got to make sure we validate that so they don't put any wacky characters in there.
Okay.
We need a business person to serve as the owner of the file share, someone who will have full control permissions. And then some of the shares need to be secured, so there should be an option to check a box so that it isn't open to the entire company. And if that box is checked, we need to know who gets access to the shares, so we should prompt them for the initial share members.
So you mean when the people have been asking for a secure share, they don't want everybody to see it?
Oh, yeah. You might have some work to do there, buddy. Status field is the final field, and this is just going to be an enumerated choice that your SMA automation is going to pick up on and process when the time comes.
Perfect. That's where I come in.
All right. Awesome. So the first step in this process is just creating a new SharePoint list. So we go to the Site Settings menu, click Add an App, and choose the Custom List app. And we are going to call our custom list demo request.
To-to-do, very important.
Yeah, no doubt. And lo and behold, we've got a list. We open that list up, and let's just take a look at the new item form.
Okay.
Not too inspiring, right?
We've got a
ways to go before we have our DFS share request form.
Yeah, not sure that's really all those requirements you had.
Yep. So SharePoint lists, a mediocre analogy for these would be kind of like a database table. They have columns that store different data types and rows that store additional items of data.
Okay. So this is where I can kind of go with my stuff to see if people requested things?
Yep. And so what we're going to do to set up this request form is modify some of the columns on the list. Every column comes with a title field by default. We are going to replace that. We're just going to repurpose that and call it share name. And require that that column has information. Going to add another input for our department. And you can see just how easy it is. SharePoint's a pretty flexible technology to create these forms in, to add additional controls and inputs. So we've got our department share, and we'll have choice for marketing. See how my typing is. Have one for information systems and probably for finance as well, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't put these good folks who came out to see us to sleep. I am going to do a little switcheroo, pull a Martha Stewart maneuver where I slide the roast into the top oven, pull it out of the bottom oven golden brown. We have already got this list configured, unless there's anyone who really wants me to see me set up.
Yeah, so Mike, you lost me there for a second talking about chicken and cooking. How do I do all this SharePoint stuff again?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Go to the blog.
Okay.
Everything, step by step by step, is documented out on the blog, so don't worry. There's a little bit of sleight of hand here, but we promise it's all there on the web. All right, so I've got all my columns set up from my requirements document, and this form looks a little bit closer to what I had in mind. What do you think of it?
Yeah, that looks pretty good. That looks pretty good, but I see some stuff there that, like status. Do we really want people setting status?
Yeah, probably not.
Or share members, shouldn't that like not be there if they aren't doing a secure share?
Oh, yeah. And I don't think there's any validation on the share name field either, so I can just put a bunch of garbage in there.
All right, let's fix that.
All right. So what we're going to do to remedy those issues is employ a tool called InfoPath. This is a tool that lets you do more advanced customizations to SharePoint forms. And we find it's nice to give our request forms those finishing touches, like some stronger validation and conditionally showing or hiding fields. So our first remark was that users shouldn't have the ability to change the status of their request. We defaulted that field to the new value, and that's what we want all our requests to come in as. So I'm going to highlight that row in the table, hit delete, and Now that's no longer a problem.
Okay.
The other thing is we have a share name field that has some prohibited characters. So we can add validation in InfoPath by clicking Manage Rules and highlighting the field. And I've done a little pre-work here as well. I've already set up a rule named Share Name Validation. And what this is going to do is just apply a regular expression to our share name to validate the input. And it looks like I've got the wrong regex on our demo list. This is validating hexadecimal numbers, but I assure you, on our real list, it's the right one. Basically, that'll prevent any of those bad characters that'll give your automation problems down the road.
Exactly. So we can get good information in and be assured of good information coming in?
Yep.
Cool.
And, you should probably write your scripts with some error handling regardless. You know, that defense in depth, layers of protection.
You know, you really want me to code better, don't you?
We're working on it. Okay. And then the final customization we're using InfoPath form is hiding the share members field when secure share isn't checked. So I've taken this row in the table and dropped it into a section control, which you can add from the ribbon here. And that section control has another rule defined on it called hide share members. So when this condition is met, we're going to hide all the content in this control. So when secure share is equal to false, or in other words, this box isn't checked, you aren't going to see this. So let's go out. Let's go to do another Martha Stewart maneuver, jump to the list, and see how our form looks. All right. We can select our root share. I can enter my share name, and hopefully validation happens.
Rut row. Live
okay.
Demo problems.
Well, I'll work on that while you're doing your automation.
That's good.
I can choose a share owner, so I want you to be in charge of my share. I'll be a good boy and remove the bad characters. We want this demo share to be secure. This is highly confidential information, but I want access to it, so I'm going to add myself as a member. And then these people picker fields are out of the box with SharePoint. They just allow you to select a filtered subset of users from the Active Directory. So it goes against our existing identity store.
Cool.
And just hit submit, and we're off to the races.
Cool. So Mike here, a lot of our requests, not everybody in the company should be able to do. DFS is one that maybe they should, but how do we do security on SharePoint?
Oh, so security on SharePoint is pretty nice. Any list can be secured using Active Directory groups, so I can just break inheritance on the security inheritance on this list, and then assign rights appropriately using an AD group. And in fact, we don't want users tampering with their submissions after they've been submitted, and we don't really want users to see each other's submissions because maybe it's for a project that's sensitive or confidential. So I'm going to go ahead and make some tweaks to the permissions on this list.
Okay.
Let's talk through this here. The process to do this is go to the List tab in the ribbon, go to List Settings, and then click on Advanced Settings.
Okay.
Here we have a chance to restrict them to only the items that they submit. If we tick this box for read items that were only items that were created by the user and create and edit items that were created by the user, that removes their ability to see other people's requests. We, with administrative permissions, will still be able to see all the requests, and your service account that's going to be querying this list will see them, but average users don't get that level of access. There's another thing that we need to do. We don't want users tampering with their requests after they've been submitted or like submitting something malicious and then deleting it to cover their tracks. So what we're going to do is change the permissions on our list to prevent users from being able to do that.
Okay.
So this is what the list looks like when it's created by default. It's inheriting permissions from the parent, the site level. And we're going to break that inheritance. So we're going to click Stop Inheriting Permissions. And then all users in our company are going to be able to access this request, so I'm going to give access to the site visitors group that has all users in it.
Sounds good.
So I'm going to highlight that group, click edit user permissions, and then I'm going to grant them submit only. Right now they have read access, so they can't even create an item here. I'm going to add this submit only permission.
Sure.
And this is another area where I'm just going to gloss over it today, but all the detailed steps for setting up that submit only permission level are detailed in the blog post. And that will restrict them from deleting or editing items after they've been submitted.
Okay.
It also does not grant them permissions to the web services, so they can't use the web service to circumvent the validation in our InfoPath form.
So that's a lot of interesting information. I'm starting to actually believe you used to be a SharePoint guy.
Alrighty. Okay, so that should handle it. The security permissions. Is there anything else you think we need to do on this guy?
You know, I'm not so sure I'm really comfortable. I want to give up some, I don't know, level of control by letting people actually do DFS shares. But
yeah, totally.
But I'm still not ready to give it up completely. I still want to be able to say yes or no. We can do the automation behind it, but I want to be able to say yes or no they can make this share, because what if they request a share that's already kind of out there, it already has a similar purpose?
Yeah, people don't tend to talk to each other before submitting requests. I think that's a good idea. So I've got a solution for that problem as well. We're going to employ another client tool called SharePoint Designer. And SharePoint Designer allows us to configure a human workflow on our list to automate the business processes surrounding a request.
So put that in regular people terms. What can I do with this?
Approvals.
Cool.
All right. Let's jump back to our DFS share request list. And once again, this is an area where you're going to have to go to the blog for the play-by-play details, but I'll show you the end product of our workflow. So we take a look at our workflows on the site. We've got DFS share request approval created. We go into the edit workflow to see the actual process that this workflow automates. It's really simple, not too much to it. Starts the approval process. You're the man in charge, so the approval tasks are going to get assigned to you.
Perfect.
If you've configured SMTP on the SharePoint server, you are going to get an email.
Okay, yeah. Oh, I should do that someday.
Didn't do that in the demo environment? All right, well, you'll still be able to approve it. And then once the approval process runs, it's going to set that status field based on the outcome of the approval process. So once it sets it to approved, if you approve the request, that's where you get to pick up with the automation.
Perfect. Sounds cool.
All right, so
hey, Mike, there was one more thing that we had talked about. What about that fancy landing page?
Oh, excellent. Great call out. All right. So I did a little more background work for our session, and I set up this list with some content types. And content types are just a SharePoint's way of creating your own custom data type. And these content types, they're represent the different categories of requests we have. And then within each category, we've got another content type with items to represent the individual requests. So this is the data that's going to make up sort of our service catalog for the portal. And
okay.
I just created that DFS share request.
Yeah.
So I'm going to add a new item so that our users can find it.
Perfect. So there's some funky stuff that you've done that's on the blog post that lets us actually set up a request catalog.
All in the blog post. You guys getting tired of hearing us say that? Charles is. He's the guy that had to deal with our last minute submission of the post, so we really appreciate that. Let's see. And then we have the list that we're going to try and link to, which is our DFS share request. What I'm going to do is just go to the new item for this bad boy, copy that link, and drop that into the request link field. All right. InfoPath likes long URLs. There is a quick quick way that I can chop some of this out. We don't need any of that nonsense. And we've got it in there. All right.
Perfect.
So, but this list view, I mean, even though it has all the data, it's not very attractive. We wanted that. I know you really wanted that database icon.
You know?
Yeah. So I'm going to try and make that happen for you, buddy.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. So what we're going to do is go out to the pages library for the site and create a new page for this guy. So, oops, not selecting new item. Go to the ribbon. Select new document. Select page. And we're going to use a really cool web part on this page. Okay, call it request catalog. Brilliant. Looks good to me. Go do it, SharePoint. All right, so we've got the request catalog page. We're going to go in and edit it. Go to the ribbon. Put it into edit mode. And drop a web part in. Now, the web part that we're going to use is new in SharePoint 2013. It's pretty cool. What it does is it goes against the SharePoint's search index. It's called this content search web part. Brings back data, and based on that data it brings back, it renders them using a variety of templates to give sort of an attractive display. So when we just drop it onto the page, it isn't very inspiring. But that's because we have a little configuration to do. So we go into Edit Web Part. And for example, it looks like it's just pulling back a bunch of random crud from our site. So we're going to have to target this query. And we're going to use the content types that I set up that are detailed in the blog post to target the query. So what we really want to display to our users is those request categories. So on the right-hand side, you can see it's giving me some example search results that the query is returning. And I want a query that gets items matching a specific content type. And then we are going to find the content type that I set up. It's called request category. And yeah, those search results look a lot more relevant to what we're trying to do right now. So that looks good. I'm going to click OK. We want more than the default 3 items. I'm just going to bump that up to 20 because we don't want to
not show everything.
Restrict anything. Yep, we want all those categories to show. And then I'm going to hit Apply and just see how this looks now.
OK.
Loading.
Keep all right. Share points loading.
Okay, so we've got our requests, we've got our icons, but they're kind of stacked on top of each other. I'm not sure if I like that look, so I'm going to switch this display template for the item. Yeah, now that's a lot more like what I've envisioned.
And you even still have the database picture.
I do. I have your database for you. I know you wanted that to be there. Okay, so we've got our request catalog configured. I'm going to check in and publish this page, and then we should be good to go.
Okay.
All right.
That looks pretty good.
Yep. Now you can just click through, file share requests,
and there
DFS share request.
There's our requests. Hey, look at that.
Here we are at the form. So I'm going to quick submit one again just to for demo purposes. And then I'm going to hand it off.
Share.
Sorry?
The classic ASDF share.
Yeah, that's an important one. So that's the end-to-end process of a user request submission. And then it's your turn, man.
Okay.
You're on the hot seat to make this actually happen.
All right, let's see if we can figure out how to do this. Want to flip over to me?
Yeah.
All right, so Mike was really good about just building that all up from the ground and not really sugarcoating or having too much pre-done. So we'll kind of follow the same sort of...
There's a little bit of magic.
There's a little bit of magic. There's always magic, but all in the blogs. But we'll kind of show you the same sort of thing on the automation side. We'll start from a clean sort of space and work up. You're not going to actually have to see me write code. We'll have some of the code pre-done. But
I've seen how you type. That wouldn't be beneficial.
Quiet now. Okay, so how many people are familiar with SMA, Service Management Automation? Hopefully you guys have seen some sessions already. I'm not going to go through SMA too far in depth. I'm going to keep this kind of high and light.
There's lots of other great content at the conference
to
get the details on this system.
Yep. But if you go into the Windows Azure pack, there's a resource provider, which is a fancy way of saying a UI, that kind of shows some information about it. I can come in here and I can get a quick look at what's going on. And I can go over to Runbooks and see all the different PowerShell workflows that are running in this system. And if you look, there's actually not that much going on in this system right now. There's, what is it, 9 different Runbooks up there running them. None of them really have anything to do with SharePoint yet. They're all part of a solution that we have posted on Charles's blog that actually integrates SMA into TFS. So what this allows us to do is check code into TFS, and it'll come up into our different SMA environments, be they dev, QA, prod. So that is set up. That is kind of a working sort of area. And from there, we're going to go and just start playing around and building some stuff to hook up to SharePoint.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So, flipping over to the wonderful PowerShell ISE, I've got a script here. I'm not going to go through it too quick. Or I'm not going to actually go through it. I'm just going to say, hey, here is a script. And it does some fun stuff and goes out and talks to SharePoint. And the first thing I'm actually going to talk about is how to actually get this into SMA using our TFS integration. So I'm going to go and open up Visual Studio, big, scary, dark. Realistically, it's just a way for us to check code in this experience, highlight the 2 things that are related to the first bit of code and say, hey, this is a cool demo.
So I don't need full-blown Visual Studio to do this, do I?
No, you don't. You just need Team Explorer.
Oh, sweet.
Exactly. So Team Explorer is, I'm checking in all 6 of them, I guess. That'll be fine. So if I go back to the Azure Pack portal, and what you'll see here in a moment is some guys switch from completed into a running status. And this is going to actually notice that I've checked things into TFS, and it's going to suck all of that information into the SMA environment and update it and set up all my variables and set up all my scripts kind of behind the scenes nice and quickly.
So this is the little arrow from the diagram before that connects SMA and TFS.
This is the arrow that connects SMA and TFS, and as always with demos, it takes a little bit longer than you hope. Here we go, flipping over, now see running. So published is the guy that actually goes out and it'll put the runbooks into the environment. So we should actually start to see this little 9 ticker over on the left-hand side increase from 9 to a different number. There we go, we've got version 1 checked in and version 2. Version 3 will come out here in a second, and then it'll do some cleanup work. So I checked it in, and it's coming up into my SMA environment, and it was sourced from a source control system. So that's pretty cool. So we've got source control all on top of our automation system.
And you tag that with a change set ID automatically?
Yes, we do.
So I can run back to TFS and see who checked that in and who broke the build?
Shh. Nobody ever breaks stuff. That never happens. Okay, but let's actually go back and actually look at the actual script that integrates us into SharePoint and give these nice people a little look at some PowerShell stuff, because that's why we're all here, is to look at code.
Sounds good to me.
No claps, uh-oh, this might go bad. All right, so we got 1 clap. Perfect. So we have this script actually split up into a number of different sections, and you mind actually kind of walking through this with me?
I've seen some of the things you turned out, and I think a little code review might be in order.
Yep. So the first thing I'm going to do is actually go out here, and I've got all of my SharePoint information kind of just hard-coded in my script. I'm going to say, hey, here's the URL to my SharePoint site. Here's mm-hmm. that name of the list that you created and some other sort of information.
Okay.
And then I kind of go down and do other stuff. But
yeah, so in addition to a SharePoint admin, I had a past life as a developer too, and one of the things that I can foggily kind of recall is that sometimes it's not the best idea to have configuration values hard-coded in your scripts. So is there any way we could kind of abstract those out or separate those from the actual process of getting work done?
That's a pretty good idea. That's a pretty good call-out. And there is. There's a nice little feature of SMA called an asset store. So if I come out and look at SMA, I can go over to assets. I can browse. And I can see there's a whole bunch of variables, because I checked in, a bit more than I was supposed to, that kind of got pulled up into this environment. Related to what we're going to do. If I go and look at one of them, a variable is just a name associated with a value. So if we look back to our script, we've got that value kind of in here. So all we need to do is in our script actually say, hey, let's go out to that asset store and pull those variables and grab that information down.
Nice.
Doing that is actually pretty easy. We go out here and let's see if I can actually remember some code. Git dash SMAV. Oh, good, tab complete works. And we're going to say name, that's probably good. And we're going to, this one is already up in the environment, so I'm just going to copy this name here. Copy, copy, copy. Copy and paste at its best. Cool. And we're going to go and say web service endpoint. So web service endpoint is just kind of pointing it at which SMA environment I go out and grab it from.
So even though those things are stored out in SMA, you can write this and debug it locally on your machine?
Yeah, exactly. So if you look at the top of our script here, you'll notice that we have web service endpoint equals HTTPS localhost. What that does is when I actually run this in my SMA environment, all these codes for getting variables will go back to the web service that runs on the same box to pull these variables. But if I'm doing development locally, I can just pass it a URL by hand and then just do my local development kind of by hand.
Sweet, because I can't live without the F5 debug, you know that.
Yep, exactly. And then normally you'll notice here I did this credential thing, get credential. Normally when I'm doing this actually at work, I'm actually on the domain running with the user that had access to do this when I'm doing development. Since we're actually in a demo environment and not on real hardware, I've got to actually pass it a credential object. But let's actually run this and see if it works and see if my typing actually did anything cool. All right, so it's prompting me, and that's a good notice. Scorch dev slash that, and it's a non-password password. Uh-oh, web service endpoint because it's null. So I actually have to set up that variable. Let's see if that worked. And can I type my password? 3, 2, 1, go.
Looks like it's doing something.
It's doing something. It hasn't given me any read back. Okay, so it went back. Do we have, if I go and say $SP site, what happens? Look at
nice.
That. We have a value back.
Awesome.
Cool. So that was pretty painful watching me do that. So instead of actually watching me do that for the rest of the script, actually, I'm going to talk about one more detail. So you could actually come out to SMA and set all of these things up by hand, which is a really cool concept, but it kind of breaks one of our ideas, which is sourcing most things from our source control system so we can tell who changed what when and roll it back if it broke. So we've got a concept of actually storing those variables in an XML file. XML. But we checked the XML file. It's got a pretty simple schema, so a pretty simple outline into TFS as well, and that's how variables actually get pulled up. And then we version that XML file as well so we can tell when the variables actually got changed.
So I can do all this setup on my local machine, check it in, and then it's in SMA.
It is.
To rock.
It is.
That's
so
pretty cool.
To set up a variable, kind of looks like this. So we put in a little area. We give it the name of the variable as it looks like in SMA. Give it the value to store it as, and it goes up and does its thing after I check it into TFS. And that way I can have it versioned. So look at this. I actually have code that should look semi okay to you so far, right?
Yeah. Yep. Right? I'm down with that now.
You're down with config values. Cool. So we're now actually getting all of our settings in a way that Mike likes, which is a good thing because he is a better coder than I. So now we do some funky stuff with SharePoint to set up the query.
It's a low bar.
So we set up the SharePoint query, and here's actually where the magic starts to happen here. So now we have all of our settings kind of set up. And this is a block inside of what's called an inline script. Inline script allows us to run in regular PowerShell instead of PowerShell workflow. If you want more information, there's better people to talk about that than me.
Yeah, there's some great sessions on PowerShell workflow in the conference, and I think we call them out at the end of the presentation.
Yep. So I go down here, and here's our fun little command to actually run the query out to SharePoint. I'm just going to use the default credentials. So if I run this in my SMA environment, it'll run as my service account. Kind of cool, right?
Okay. Not sure about that one. I know when we had orchestrator automation going on, we had that one service account, and it just kind of collected permissions until it had rights to just about everything in our enterprise. So do you think there's something we can do to, practice least privilege administration and create different identities for different actions that need to happen?
But I like God accounts. Okay, no, but there is. I digress. There actually is. So again, SMA has an answer to this. It's called a credential store. So up in SMA, you can, let's actually go take a look, go out back to the assets area and set up credentials. And you can see that we already have three kind of set up in our environments. And credentials really are just PowerShell credentials. So you give them a name and you plop in the password. So I go out here, I say new, and oops, nope, that's not where I go. I go down to the assets tab and I say add setting, and I say credential. And I can say either a PowerShell credential or a certificate for those of us who are certificately inclined. You give it
certifiable,
a name.
Certifiable.
And we suggest that you actually name these things the same as the actual account that's going to live underneath, just so it's more readable. So if I had an account called ScorchDevQWERTY, I would go there, and then I would say ScorchDevQWERTY, and then plop in the password there.
So I know that we put the variables in using that XML file. Could we do the same with these credentials?
You know, Mike, if we did that, that's a decent idea. I like that idea, but the problem is that our password would then be in source control too, and I'm not sure that I want everybody who has read access to my source control being able to see the passwords of domain admins.
Oh, yeah, I guess I didn't think about that. I've got a problem with plain text credentials, though.
You know, you just seem to like those, and that's probably not a good idea. So this is the one thing that we do actually do through the web UI of SMA. We come and pre-create the credentials that we need, and then we just reference them kind of in our scripts. So I'll close out of this. And we'll go back to the scripting area. All right. So let's talk about how to actually do that. So let me flip on over to the third script version. You'll see a new sort of area up in our credential or up in our settings area. So the first thing we do is actually go out and get a variable from the asset store from TFS that just contains the name of the credential to access. This allows us to change that. If we want to use different credentials, we just have them pre-populated in our SMA environments, so then we can change which credential it's pointing to.
Yeah, probably shouldn't use the same IDs in dev, QA, and prod.
Exactly. It gives us flexibility in that respect. And then we've got this nice, dandy commandlet here called git automation ps credential, which will go out, and if this is running in a SharePoint, or a little bit, not a SharePoint environment, in a SMA environment, it'll actually securely access the asset store and bring the credential into the session so you can utilize it.
Nice.
Much better than plain text. And for local development, the guy sitting right here in the front row, Mr. Joe Levy, has written some stuff so that lets us actually work semi-securely on your own development experience.
Is that in the Building Clouds blog as well?
It is.
Nice.
Actually, it's a reference to Joe's blog.
Oh, okay.
I don't like recreating content. Okay, so this is the four little lines that will actually allow you to get a credential from the store. And now, if I run down here my script, inline script's got a pretty cool capability. So I can actually just pass that credential object to that whole inline script block. And everything inside of that inline script block will actually run as that credential.
Oh, awesome. So I don't have to do a bunch of invoke commands and pass the credential and deal with all that nonsense?
Right, you can just kind of set it up and that block of code runs as that credential.
That's pretty slick.
Yeah, it works pretty well. So let's go down and take a look at this. So this line here actually goes out and is running our query defined requests in that new status and that approved status after we actually did that SharePoint garbly guck. And then we actually go out and the first thing we do is change the status of the request from approved to a different status in progress, so it doesn't get processed twice.
Okay.
Pretty brilliant,
right?
Makes
sense. I'm with you so far.
Cool. So here we go. Right here, now that it's in progress, I think I can just start putting the code to actually make the DFS share. So I think it starts kind of like...
So one thing that I noticed...
Sure.
If you put it right in line there, it's going to process these one by one serially.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way that we can kind of separate the monitoring of SharePoint from the actual work we're doing? Like maybe do sort of a fire and forget thing where we asynchronously build these things out?
You mean you don't want all the shares to wait for the other ones to complete before they do?
Well, I just know when they submit that batch of 20, they want them all right now. And
okay, that seems like a pretty good idea.
All right.
That seems like a pretty good idea. So if we scroll down a little bit, we can take a look at this. We've got this fun little commandlet here. And there it goes. To actually start SMA runbooks. So this will actually go out and say, hey, I'm going to call a different runbook. I'm going to pass it some parameters. In our case, we'll pass it the pointer to the individual list item. So that request can then go and figure all the information out about the list item and go out and create the DFS share. But it'll do that kind of asynchronously. It'll just start the new job, and then it'll go on with life.
Nice.
And continue monitoring. So if I'm looking at this, this actually looks kind of cool. This looks like something that we could use really, really generically for just monitoring SharePoint. There's a few settings that probably should be unique to the different SharePoint lists and the different requests, but overall, so it kind of looks...
Maybe I should save that to Notepad so I can copy and paste it for all our new things.
Yeah, but then we're back into the problem of what happens when we upgrade to SharePoint 2015 and the way we actually interact with SharePoint changes. We'd have to go through all of those scripts and kind of re-update how we interact with SharePoint.
Okay, so do you have a solution, Smarty Pants?
I don't, but they do. There's a concept of having workflows be able to reference other workflows kind of in line. So I can have this kind of reusable block of code and store it up in SMA and then just reference it from other scripts. And that's how we have the real thing working.
Oh, nice.
So let's go out to SMA and actually take a look at the real thing. So if I go back to runbooks, I should be able to find a runbook out here called Monitor DFS Share. And it's not there.
Did you need to check it in?
Well, I thought I checked it in this morning. Let me go take a look at source control. All right, so if I go up to DFS Share, it looks blank. Did you delete some stuff, Mike?
I was playing around a little bit before the demo. I don't, this is embarrassing.
Okay, well, at least it's in source control. So I'm going to go up here, I'm going to say roll back. We're going to go back to something we actually know works. I'm going to go back, roll back to a specific version. I actually saved the gold version of this. And actually, it looks like I said let's delete some stuff.
Oh, okay, it was you. Thank God.
That was actually me. Uh-oh. We got to turn that feature off. It shouldn't tell you who did it.
I really like that that TFS lets us know just who did what.
Yeah,
that's really valuable.
That's going to make that whole bus thing kind of hard. All right, so there we go. We rolled that back. So I'm going to say back in working order as my little comment there. And we'll check that guy in, and there all of my scripts that actually do all of the real work are now kind of checked in.
Okay, and if I actually want to see that magic script that actually creates the DFS share?
Yeah, so if I look at the time, our session has a kind of a time limit to it, so we could actually go through here, and I can open up that, let me just go this direction. I could go out here, and I could open up new DFS share, and we could walk through the few hundred lines of code that actually go out and make the DFS share for us.
Yikes.
Yeah, that's actually just a lot of cool PowerShell code that if you guys are PowerShell people is pretty cool, but it's out on the blog and kind of detailed what each step does. I'll run through it really quickly and just tell you what it does do at a high level. So it goes out and it'll build us an Active Directory group if secure share is checked, add the members to it. It'll build the actual DFS share, link it up to the roots, and go out and do some interactions with SharePoint and figure out which file share has got the most free space on it, put it on that file share or file server. So it's pretty intelligent, and it's a script that does actually really work and does actually really build DFS shares. It's just not a script that I think really is worth going.
Maybe not totally relevant to what we're trying to to explain about self-service requests.
You know, probably not.
All right.
I think a demo of it working probably will.
Yeah, maybe time to quit stalling and put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, here we go. So let's take a look. Hopefully this guy ran. So hopefully if I go up here, we've got that there. Did I actually check this in? Git monitor TFS rutrow. This might actually be a real monitor SharePoint list. That's not what I want. I want back to Source Control Explorer. I swear this works. Change set 214. No change set 214. Well, let's go in here and see if we can't get it to kick forwards a little bit. Let's try this again. I'll just change this file a little bit and check in. Let's see if that can get it to kick forwards or if we are in what people like to call a bad. Oh, there we go.
That was not a fake demo glitch. That was not a fake demo glitch.
That was kind of a UI delay. Thank you for scaring me there, Eamon. We can see that change set 214, and of course we don't have backup pictures of this. So this has got to just kind of work. You know.
It's on the blog, right?
It's on the blog. All right, so after these guys flip from running to complete, I'll know that my integration to TFS is kind of simmered down and nothing's going to delete on me when I'm running and I don't expect it to. All right, so this guy should go from running to complete. There we go. So we're good. So we can go up to the monitor here. So monitor DFS share approved. And let's actually take a look at what that guy looks like in kind of its simplified form. So I'm going to go out here, and I'm going to take a look at that with you guys. So a lot of this, now we have a nice little comments block, because this is actually the real sort of thing. But this settings portion is still the same sort of settings portion that we looked at before. There's still a bunch of unique information I need for monitoring this individual request on this SharePoint list. So it's got to be stored somewhere, so we have a unique monitor. But after all the settings have been gathered, we just have a single call out to a shared runbook that has all of the other information about how to actually loop and how to call itself again and how to behave properly inside of SMA. This monitor SharePoint list actually just lives in our SMA environment. It's got its own little root and its own little folder and its own little everything.
That's going to save me a boatload of copy and pasting.
It's a boatload of copying and pasting. But if you look at it, this is pretty much the exact same code that we just walked through. It goes out, instead of having the stuff come from settings, it's just passed in as parameters right here. So every time I call it, I can pass it all of that unique information that I grabbed from the asset store. But then it has all of that interesting looping and updating and recalling itself, the 203 lines of stuff to actually correctly interface and monitor SharePoint. So it's just a common thing that we reference from all the other sort of things.
Nice.
Yeah, so it ends up working out pretty well, I hope. So let's come back here, and without further delay, I'm going to go to monitor DFS share approved, and I'm going to start this guy up.
So now we're looking at SharePoint. SMA, that arrow from the diagram has been completed. It's watching for a new request to be there.
It has. If you look, I've got debug and verbose turned on. Those got turned on because in my configure file, I had them set to actually be turned on. So once this actually starts up, we'll be able to look at the debug stream and verbose stream and actually see the different things that I've chosen to log so I can actually watch what's going on and what it's doing to make sure that it is actually working before I go out to the live SharePoint site and see if it'll actually kick off and tie up. So it's starting, and I'm really impressed by this little starting icons that they've made in this product.
There's all kinds of innovation in loading icons in this portal.
Exactly. It's been a long time since we've seen the little...
All right.
Yep. All right, so
that's doing its thing.
There's the newest thing. All right, so we've got this. We are now in a running status. If we go over to history, it probably is going to be blank. Nope. Here we go. So here's all of our information. So the first thing we do is actually just pipe out all of the stuff we grabbed from the asset store. So if I'm coming in, or you're coming in, and this broke, we can see kind of what the inputs were.
Nice.
And we can see that it's going out and it's looking for stuff in the approved status. And it's going to change it to in progress. And here we go. So it's going out there and it's running. So if I refresh this real quick, we should see that it actually is querying SharePoint, or when it updates, it'll actually show us that it's querying SharePoint and not finding anything to do yet, because we don't have anything in an approved status.
Yeah.
So let's go back to your SharePoint site and let's see if, actually, one more thing before we actually put a real request through. I'm going to go out to our environment and show you that stuff is not actually built.
Aha, no smoke and mirrors.
No smoke and mirrors. Okay, so it'll build us a Active Directory group, and if we look in here, here's all the different Active Directory groups that have been built while we were testing and debugging and making sure this actually works in our demo environment. And here is one of our DFS routes for finance. And there's only 3 shares in it at the moment, and each of those shares has got security set up on it and all that fun stuff. So if this actually works like it should, we'll see another Active Directory group get made. There'll be some people in it, and there'll be another share made, and it'll have access granted to that share.
All right. So do you want me to go submit a request?
Sure, you can submit a request, or I can.
Well, you're the approver, so I figured.
Okay. I like using your UI.
Okay. Do it. It's all you.
I have power. All right, so file share requests. I just went through our little landing page and went to file share requests. You can see that here's all the different things that we have related to file share requests.
Yep.
And DFS share request is kind of the cool one that we want to do right now. So marketing, the one I had pulled up kind of in the demo was finance. So let's build it in finance. Did you fix the regex stuff?
Ooh, I didn't get around to that, so.
Not fixed yet. All right, so we'll call this Eamon share. And we're going to actually set Mr. Eamon as the share owner. There he is. And we're going to make this one secure. And secure means that an Active Directory group will get made. And we're going to put Joe Levy in the group, if I can actually grab Joe. And we're going to put Mr. Charles Joy. Oopsies. And we're going to put myself.
Looks like I might have had a little misconfiguration on that control there.
Uh-oh, only one person can be a share member. All right, that's fine. If you fix your stuff, maybe myself will work. All right, so I'm just going to put myself in for now. And I'm going to go ahead and say submit. All right, so now what? Do I go over to approve it, right?
So, yeah, if you go to site contents and take a look at that request list, I mean, once you set up SMTP, you'll get this just in your inbox, but for now, you can click on DFS share request and see your request there, and that workflow is in progress, so just give that guy a good firm click and see where it's at.
All right.
Looks like it's waiting for your approval.
All right, so I've got my choice. I can either approve or reject. I like approving.
You're a yes kind of guy.
You know, that's why I'm a good approver. I do that job well. All right, so let's go back to kind of the front page here, to the nice runbook dashboard. We have DFS share approved is sitting in the running status. In a moment, if everything works as we want it to, we should see this new DFS share pop up and actually have a job running. Again, this is going out every 30 seconds and looking for new stuff, so it might take up to 30 seconds for this to happen.
So we need to fill this space with some semi-witty banter.
Or we can just go back here and actually take a look at, if I go back to your actual thing, back.
Just go to site contents to get back to the list.
That sounds like a good idea. Site content, and I go to, there it is. And if I refresh this page, actually, we can see that the status is now in progress. And in progress means that the monitor has found the work to do, so we can go back and look at that nice little log on the monitor. And I'll look at jobs, and I'll grab the job that's running, and I'll go to the history tab. Again, the history tab is just a bunch of debug statements or verbose statements that I, in my script, have decided to actually put out here. And if I go over and I look at the next page, I can see that one of these should have actually found. So we go out here, and you can see that it actually queried SharePoint, found zero, queried SharePoint, found zero. And in one of these logs somewhere, it'll actually say new request count was one, and that caused the other guy to kick off. But let me go back, because our brand spanking new DFS share has a job that has completed.
So this is the guy that does the actual work.
This is the guy that does the actual work. If we go over to history, here's all of the output of this guy, so all of our logging. So if it didn't work and it was more of my normal script and had broken, could come out here and see why it broke if you were doing it.
I think
it.
I'm going to become familiar with this screen.
Yep. Look at that. It found a drive with about a gig free on it.
Nice.
And that's kind of where the guy got built. So let's look and see if it actually
Here's
happened.
The moment of truth.
Moment of truth. Okay, so if I go up here, here's aim and share.
Nice.
Nice and created. And if I go up here, there we go.
Thank you.
And if we look, we even have the group that was created. And if I open this up, in theory, I should see Eamon as a member.
Nice. All right, so all the sacrifices to the demo gods paid off. We managed somehow to build this end-to-end solution with only a little bit of smoke and mirrors. And all that rest is detailed on the blog. So
let's switch back to some slideware.
Yeah. Having demoed all that end-to-end, we wanted to share just a little bit of our experiences in building this automation and portal, and we're going to break character and just be ourselves again. These are real things that we learned. We're enterprise IT guys, like many of you, trying to complete this effort in our actual work environment.
Yep. So, lessons learned on the automation stack. This is where I'm actually supposed to talk. The first one is SMA, or really any. So, PowerShell workflow and PowerShell in general has been something that people have been telling us to learn for a long time.
Workflow is a little bit newer.
Workflow is new, but PowerShell has been around for a while. And my first sort of suggestion, if you're actually going to go down and try to automate something, is really start by trying to get a good understanding of workflow. If you can understand workflow, the actual integration to SMA is rather trivial. Workflow is the language. SMN just happens to be where it runs. And realistically, workflow, PowerShell workflow, can kind of do anything, automate any sort of request, be it exchange stuff or share stuff or the classic sort of stuff around server.
And there's a few quirks come in that I know I had to deal with come in from normal SharePoint, normal PowerShell, excuse me, scripting, moving into a workflow. But once you get those down, it feels pretty familiar and not too much different from what I'm used to doing.
Exactly. And ISC actually is pretty good at handholding you through most of your errors and doing nice red squigglies.
Absolutely.
All right. So leveraging a source control system is the next sort of thing that is a huge benefit of SMA and PowerShell in general. Since PowerShell scripts are just text-based, we can really actually take that text and store it in a TFS or a GitHub or Subversion or any sort of source control system, actually get versioning, so we can tell who actually did what. And more importantly, if something breaks, we can roll it back. We actually have real rollback plans for our automation now, which is huge.
That sounds like something I could definitely use.
Yeah.
So it's something that we struggled with a lot back in Orchestrator, but are in a really good place now with PowerShell and SMA.
Yep. As far as the user interface goes, we chose SharePoint, and the goal of this talk is not to tell you exactly what to do, and step by step, you should reproduce this exactly in your enterprise. By all means, you can if you want to, but our goal was just to exemplify how you could use Microsoft technologies to make this kind of idea a reality. So we chose SharePoint as our user interface technology because I had a lot of experience with it. I knew it was up to the job. And most importantly, our clients knew how to use it and were comfortable with it. That might not be the right choice in your enterprise. And we definitely did spend some time, months, evaluating different front-end solutions. Maybe your ServiceNow shop or Remedy or something like that. And one of those interfaces makes more sense.
Yep.
But because SMA is so flexible with the PowerShell workflow, you can pretty much integrate it with whatever user interface technology you want, as long as it has some sort of API or web service.
Yep. And the last sort of point that we didn't actually touch on in the demo at all is that it really makes a lot of sense and is pretty necessary, at least in our company, to actually track how much time the different automation projects you've done actually save. So we've gone down the route of actually making a little one-line PowerShell module that says track runbook execution. That goes out and puts a little record into a database, and we do reporting off of it. And it allows us to say how many times have things run and actually show back to our management why employing Mike and I is a good thing.
Yep, so that 30 minutes you and investing, continuing to invest in automation and self-service, that 30 minutes you didn't spend building a file share gets multiplied by all those requests and all those file shares you didn't have to build by hand. And you can see as you increase the number of automated requests available, these things just kind of tend to build up, and the value and the time savings can be pretty astounding when you look at it.
Yep, but really tracking that and tracking it in a centralized place and then giving it to somebody to do reporting off of helps make the decision and makes the decision to invest in your team a lot easier of a business case to pitch.
Absolutely. There's some other non-technical lessons we learned as we were engaging in this effort. Automation can be scary, realistically. The people we're working with who own the systems we automate against are IT professionals. They're incentivized on keeping systems up, available, performant, and reliable. Well, what are we trying to do? We're trying to introduce change to their systems, and we're trying to introduce automated change too, writing our own code. So that has the potential to destabilize those systems, and those guys are understandably a little bit wary of automation. So what you can do to address that is nibble around the edges. See if you can find some low-hanging fruit, some easier tasks that may be undesirable, that they really hate to do, that you can knock off to prove the value of automation in a lower risk scenario. When you're doing your automation too, just try and tackle the 80% case, the Pareto principle or the 80-20 rule. If you can write automation that takes care of the standard case, you know, the vanilla plain Jane file share that we need to set up, that'll serve almost 80% of the requests that come into our IT. And those oddball ones that need some special hand-holding or a special touch, can continue to be serviced manually, because if you spend your time trying to get your automation to encompass every single imaginable scenario, you're never going to get it done, or it's never going to be quite right. So this is the old saying, the perfect is the enemy of the good. Strive for the good, not the perfect.
Yep.
And as in our demo, approvals can ease some anxiety of administrators who are worried about this destabilizing their systems. That can incorporate their human touch. So for the first few that come in, they can do the approval, go out, look, and see that the automation did the appropriate things, everything's set up correctly. And sometimes approval will continue to be necessary for business process reasons, but sometimes you can take those training wheels off and make requests completely self-service after your automation has proved itself and proved that it's robust and reliable. And then the final recommendation is I would avoid trying to build a full-blown application in this model. I think the solution that we've set forward in this session is good for processing individual requests. When you get into a larger application, like managing a resource's life cycle or complex workflows, things of that nature, then it makes sense, I would say, to evaluate off-the-shelf products, look at what vendors have available, and or if you have internal development staff. I mean, that's why you have them. That's what they're there to do. So this is a great solution, or a great solution template for automating individual requests, but be wary of solutions that tend to get more complex and feel like a full-blown application. We really thank you guys for coming out and sitting through our presentation. We really hope it was valuable to you. We're IT professionals, and we tried to deliver something that we thought we'd like to see when we go to a conference.
Yep.
Again, one last plug, if you want to do something like this in your environment, go out to the blog. We'll monitor the blog comments. So if you have any problems with the steps or they don't work for you, I'm happy to reply there. I'm happy to take questions here as well. We have a list of related content because it's the last day of the conference. Unfortunately, most of these sessions have already passed, but I'd definitely go check them out on Channel 9. And there is some more information, links to resources on Windows Server, System Center, Azure Pack, all that good stuff. Please evaluate us. We want to know how we did. Hopefully, we delivered something that's useful, perhaps win an Xbox.
And thank
you so much.
Yeah, thanks for coming out on a Thursday morning.
We're happy to do any Q&A. We've got a few minutes left. You can step to the mic, or you can just come up and chat with us. Thank you guys so much.